It was a good day yesterday. Had the opportunity to be invited to a community event. Multiple organizations came together and brought about six of us, six speakers, I don't know how many we were total. But it was a conference, it was a workshop, all-day workshop for middle schoolers and high schoolers, community-wise. And the topic was, as you probably can imagine, middle schoolers and high schoolers, the power to wait, abstinence, wait until marriage. I'm sitting there and I'm listening to the speakers, and obviously my time came. And my prayer, in my mind, what I pray for as I look at this young people, was not only to discover the power of waiting or abstinence, but I wanted to say, let me talk to you about the power of sex. Not just to wait, but sex is so powerful. It's a powerful thing. Sexuality is powerful. How powerful it is. Let me tell you how powerful sex is. And this is not about sex, so just relax, okay? It's not about money nor sex, so just chill. I just want to illustrate my point. Sex is so powerful that we as a culture, we don't have a worldview of sex. We have sex determining the worldview. You see the difference? We don't have an opinion on sex. It's sex in our culture that defines everything for us, pretty much. So when we look at this series and why we're studying the Ten Commandments, it's because we don't want to be the generation that has the biblical or the right worldview of God. I don't think that's enough for you and I to have the right doctrine, the right singing, the right prayers, the right preaching about God. We want for God to define worldviews. We want for God to be the source of sex and money and parenting and grief and calamities and joy and eternal life. I mean, everything has to be brought from God, not simply God as a means to define things. I don't know if that makes any sense in your mind, but for me, this is very, very important, because if you remember the story or the timeline, this is Deuteronomy, so Genesis, Exodus. Exodus is when they exit Egypt to go into this journey of 40 years in the wilderness, the people of God, towards the promised land. And in chapter 20, the commandments are given. Then you get into the other two books, Numbers and Leviticus. And then finally you get to Deuteronomy, which implies this is the fifth before the sixth. And the sixth is the conquering of the land. Back in Genesis chapter 15, you begin and you engage between God and this priest, this now father of the nations called Abraham. But it's back in Genesis, and he promised him a kid, that a kid will bring a family, and the family will bring families, and the families will become a nation, and out of this nation redemption will come to the place. We call that redeemer Jesus Christ. So it's true, it happened. But as they move into this transition from the fifth book to the sixth book, from ending the wilderness journey into actually possessing the land, Moses is reminding them, you're coming from 400 years of slavery and idolatry and polytheism, multiple gods and goddesses, and you're moving into a land that is filled with exactly the same thing. So when you look at the Ten Commandments, whether it's in Exodus or now in the book of Deuteronomy, is not so this people can simply have the right view of God. I can even argue that Pharaoh back in Egypt, back in Exodus, had the right view of God when he finally let the people go. I think that's the right view of God. What we want, and what Moses tried to do with this Ten Commandments, is to have God defining the view, defining the worldview, God creating, being the source of how we see life, especially for this generation. And I think we're in the same place. So last week, we began with the first commandment. And if you were here last week, I just want to remind you, we began with a commandment that basically says, you should not have any other gods before me, God said. And this is what we said last week. We ended up saying that a unique God, because he's a unique God, he's different. He has no comparison. I talk about, you know, me fighting, I don't know, Pacquiao, or, you know, me fighting Canelo Alvarez or any of these professional fights. That won't be that much of a fight because we're in two different spheres of life, right? And abilities. Kind of the same scenario when God says, no other gods before me. There is no one compared to him. Now, the reason why we talk about the first commandment last week, and we ended up by basically reminding you or sharing with you the death of a husband of a church member last week, and I told you last week that the funeral was very unique, was very unusual. Meaning, it was very gospel-centered. Most funerals are not gospel-centered. At least that's my experience. So a unique God produces a unique life that is reflected on a unique funeral. So if we were to do your funeral or my funeral, will that be a unique funeral or there will be just one more, like many other funerals? Well, here's the bottom line. The uniqueness of God, why God is so unique and he cannot allow other gods before him is because, as we began the conversation, as we explained this from the beginning, God wanted a relationship with his people. And because he is a holy God, and even as God gives the law to Moses back in Sinai, back in Exodus, Moses actually told God, "Show me your glory." And God tells Moses, if I show you my glory, you will automatically become a better person, a better husband. Would you be a great leader of this nation? No. What happened to you if I show you my glory? You die. So here's the point. The uniqueness of God and why God is different, and this is why we worship, by the way, this is why we worship, is because worship, adoration to God, recognition of the uniqueness of God and how he stands alone like no one else, is simply us conveying to God, telling God, we admit, we recognize that we cannot see your glory. You are merciful enough to give us glimpses of your glory in the Old Testament, a tabernacle. In the Old Testament, a pillar of fire that led these people through the night in the wilderness. A cloud during the day, remember? Those are tangible manifestations of the Shekinah glory, the presence of God. But no one has ever seen God. So worship is our ability to look at God without really looking at God and saying, I'm going to bring to you adoration because I believe and I trust that you alone have my best interest. Versus, no worship is basically me saying, I know what is good for me. I know what I need. And then you know how the story typically ends when you and I try to define things for our own selves. Well, here's the bottom line. The bottom line, what we said last week, is that this stand alone, no God before me, is nothing else but us being protected from God first and foremost. Now think about it. Just process this with me. Protection from God. Why? When they left Egypt, the first thing that happens, you know the story, the first thing that happens, they exit Egypt, and right behind them, Pharaoh changes his mind. Go get him. And here are the Egyptians right behind the Israelites. And what do they find in front of them? The Red Sea. And they look at Moses and says, is that what you brought us to die? You know the story. He takes the staff and the rod of God and he departs the waters, right? Now, some of you are like, that's not true. That's fine. We can argue that later on. Right now, I got the mic, so just listen to me for a moment. So he opens the sea. They walk in dry land. And the point is this. This whole trauma, this whole drama, this whole craziness of walking through dry land, the Egyptians behind them, and then for 40 years, they will face enemies every single day. The calamities of the climate and the hunger and the clothing. It's 40 years in the wilderness. And here's the bottom line. God says, here's what I want you to understand. As many enemies you have already right now as we speak, you left behind a bunch of enemies in Egypt, and you're walking into the promised land filled with enemies, you must fear me. Don't fear them. Fear me. Don't anybody tracking what I'm saying? Stop fearing the wrong thing. That's what he's basically saying. So, number one, no other gods before me is basically God saying, you will fear someone, fear the right person. Fear, as a nation, I'm convinced. As churches in this nation, I'm more than convinced. Our issue is not disbelief or apathy. You know what our issue is? We don't fear him. We do not fear him. We don't take him serious. We have forgotten how sacred and holy he is. That's what we're talking about, this issue. So, fear God. Secondly, and this is what you have on your handouts, the next verse, is that now that you have learned to fear me and to be protected from me, not from the nations, not from hunger, and not even from death. I mean, come on, I conquered death, right? That's God. I conquered death. I want you to hear this. Now, this is commandment number two. This is the second one. You shall not make for whom? In other words, I want you to fear, I want you to be protected from me, but now I want you to be protected from yourself. Because if you think about it, after you fear God, what happens when you connect with God and you worship God properly? The greater or the bigger, the larger, the more clear the picture and the image and the nature of God, the more your and my character is revealed. In other words, if you're sitting in this place and you are still blaming someone else about your inaccuracies, your shortcomings, your previous issues, or your fears towards the future, you haven't understood or you have not really embraced God, because God, what he reveals himself by exposing your brokenness and my brokenness, first and foremost. So in this case, he says, hey, I want you to be protected from me, but now I want you to be protected from yourself, because your tendency is that you will create images. That's what you have known for 400 years, worship idol. You're walking into the promised land completely surrounded and just as part of the environment of worship, idol worship. So now I want you to protect yourself from yourself, that you will not create anything in the form of anything in heaven and above, in heaven above, or on earth beneath the waters, and every single other place in the universe. So here's what I want you to know, or I want you to think for a moment. The protection is first and foremost from God. Secondly, it's from self, because again, because we're just dumb people. That's the reality, you know. And then the last one is hell. Yeah, it's okay to fear hell, and you don't want to go to hell. And it's not a good deal if you end up in hell. But typically, people preach the gospel. Typically, people present the message of salvation, ignoring or deleting God himself, and begins with hell. Well, I wouldn't begin like that. I think salvation is primarily from God. I don't want to. In other words, I know Satan is a real person, but and Satan is to be taken serious. But Satan is a servant of God, right? So yeah, I'm like, hey, it's okay, it's cool. Yeah, we can talk and we can do whatever you want on that regard. But the reality is that God is the one that I fear, and then therefore I also need protection from self, and I need protection from hell. Now here's the thing. Because again, this is where we're going and what we're talking about in here. Moving into the promised land, what God is going to ask them to do, and this is from day one, is that God, I mean, think about it. This is Moses is speaking. So this is not like a church thing. It's not like a Sunday school class. It's not like, okay, guys, open your Bibles and let's talk about God. No, this is life. It's just happening. It's just unfolding before them. The beauty of this story actually is that these guys are creating a nation. Like they're building identity. So here's the point. When you look at this protection from God, from self, and from hell, it's not so you can just do a checklist. I'm saved. I can try my best for the next 40, 50, 70 years that I live on this earth. And then at the end, I'm going to, where am I going? I'm going to heaven. That's not the principle. Remember, these people, when they first got this message, they are not thinking about life after death. They're thinking about life right now, right here. The Jordan River is in front of us. We remember, we've heard through Facebook, through Twitter, that 40 years ago, Brother Moses, which is no longer with us, Josh, where are you, Josh? Joshua, here we go. All right, bro, you were there. So you guys departed the Red Sea. Now we have the Jordan River, and if I'm not mistaken, that's Jericho. So this whole thing about protection from God is right now, right here, in this moment. I'm not thinking about, hey, one day, someday, we'll go to heaven. No, it's right here. Anybody, have you felt like that before? Are you coming from a week where you're like, I'm all for heaven, but I need it right now. Like, hell is happening right here, right now. Well, but here's the thing. For you to make it habitual, this protection, okay, please listen, because I'm talking about people of God, God protecting. If you dare, here's God, if you dare to do this and move away from my protection, here's what's going to happen. You will end up by bowing down to those idols. When you do this, you will be worshiping and bowing down before them. And I can just see Moses. I mean, Moses is what? Somewhere in the 120 years of age, remember? 40 years in Egypt. He kills the Egyptian, flees to the wilderness. 40 years in the wilderness by himself. He's 80. Burning bush, go back to Egypt, let my people go. He's 80 when the journey began, and he has journeyed for how many years? 40. So the 40. He's on the third set of the 40 package deal. So when he talks about bowing down to them and worshiping, Moses is remembering his early days, childhood. And what did Moses know? He wasn't the prince of Israel. He wasn't the pastor's kid. Who was Moses? The prince of the epicenter of culture that even as we speak today, you have seen so many movies. You've seen The Mummy, right? All these Egyptian cultures, what do they have? They have the bowing down to worship idols. So Moses is saying, listen to me. If you ever remove yourself from the protection of God, from protecting from yourself and eventually from the enemy, you will go back to where you were before. So the issue is not Egypt. What's the issue? The issue is you. The issue is your heart. The issue is your worldview. Go back to that comment, right? How you see life, how you portray yourself in the entire place. So again, I'm at the conference and yesterday, and we come to the end of the conference and we do a panel discussion. I love panel discussions, live questions. Yeah. So on my right, there is a medical doctor, lady, doctor. On my left, there is a judge, you know, the law. It's on my left. And I'm in the middle. So there's the three of us, bunch of kids. Questions. As the first question had to do with venereal diseases and all this craziness. So that goes to the doctor. Doctor, that's your field. Talk to these kids about all this craziness with transmitting sexual diseases. Second question. Here's the question. Life questions, okay? So how, they said, we understand that we're supposed to wait and we're supposed to abstain from sex. Middle schoolers and high schoolers. We got it. And I'm like, yeah. How do I handle my urges? And both ladies turn this way and look at me. Pastor, that's your question. How do I handle all this desire for sex as a 17-year-old, 16-year-old, 14-year-old? How do I handle this, Pastor? Because I understand I'm not supposed to, but how do I handle this? And I'm like, well, glad you asked. Let's talk. I said, I'm going to talk to you if you were my kids because I have three. I have a 19-year-old, 17-year-old, and a 15-year-old. So here's how you handle this. Number one, is stop buying into the lie that if you feel it, you have to do it. You don't have to do everything that you feel. You don't have to execute your feelings all the time. Yeah? I actually made a comment that I was like, oh, man, I don't know if this is right. But I actually said, hey, if I have ever done everything I've ever felt, I'll be in jail right now. And I'm like, oh, I'm besides a judge. Ooh, I don't know if I should have said that. I was afraid that she will say, so what have you done? Well, what have you felt? Well, I haven't done everything that I have felt all the time. Guys, I'm going to have to take this off because my mic is killing me in the back. I'm sorry. So, stop thinking that you have to do everything you feel. Secondly, If that's the case, you ask me, I'm a pastor, my worldview comes from the scriptures. We are not bodies with souls. We are souls with... That implies that your sexuality doesn't define you. It does not define you. And I openly said, if you are in this place right now, sitting right here, and you are attracted to the same sex, I don't know what it's like, but here's the bottom line. It doesn't have to define your personality, your personal preferences on sexuality. That was my take. Now, I stopped right there and then before I got in trouble. And then the last thing that I said is this. Here is the simple way for me to deal with your urges. Get married young. Just get married. Because once you get married, it's what? It's on. Donkey Kong. It's on, but come on, guys. All this nonsense of waiting. I told them, I said, most of marriage counseling in my realm is a bunch of adults who went crazy, wild, because they were trying to get their education. And I'm just offending people right now and parents. I don't care. I'm tired. I'm just tired of this nonsense that people, in the name of whatever it is, go through promiscuity, finally get married, bring all this baggage to my office, and I spend 4 days talking about all this craziness that I'm like, are you kidding me? Just because you wouldn't get married? Anyway, so I just told them, I said, text your parents what I just told you. Get married young. Call me if they need to. Anyways, here's the bottom line. The question that they had is legit. But you know what the question really implied? Their question implied this. We have needs, or we have urges, or we have this sexual drive, and we can control it. We are slaves to it. When he talks about bowing down and worship, what God is basically saying, the moment you avoid my protection, you will become slaves to whatever that is. Whatever that is. Now, here's the bottom line. God has told us and showed us that when he becomes the master, that's when you are really free. Because true freedom is not the ability to do as you please. True freedom is the ability to choose God. Without his spirit, without his empowerment, you don't have the ability to do what is right. So in this case, he goes and says, avoid this slavery, avoid this nonsense of becoming a slave to something else. And this is why, because I am the Lord, not only your God, but this, your God, is reflected that I am a jealous God. So think about it. Not only that I want you to stay put with me, I want you to stay with me, I want you to be exclusively mine, but when you, watch this, when you move away from this relationship and you go after other idols and you worship either self or others, when you worship sex or you worship whatever you're worshiping, here's the main problem. The main problem is that when you and I engage into this relationship, how the relationship began, it began through a covenant. And God is telling this people, I am jealous not only of you, but first and foremost, I'm jealous of my covenant. Because in my covenant is my reputation that is in the line. Anytime that you attempt to break my covenant, here's the thing. Because I am the only God, you don't get to break my covenant. My covenant breaks you. And we call this exile. We call this a lot of suffering for these people. Our nation is in trouble because we have had the unmitigated audacity to think that we can mock God. It's not going to happen, people. It's not going to happen. You may think that you can get away with God and his commands and his statutes. You don't break them. They break me. So God is basically saying, this is about my covenant. Now, this covenantal thing, which again, we go back into the history of this, is the covenant that unavoidably is done through a community between parents and between their children, that he basically tells us, because of my protection and because of my jealousy, not just only for you, because I love you, but I love my covenant more than I love you, because my covenant is what you really need right? My covenant is what you really need. You don't need a God that accommodates to you. You need a covenant that allows you to get the full picture of who you're supposed to be. So I'm jealous of that, and that filters into the fact that I am a just God. And if anybody needed a justice in the wilderness, was the people of God. 400 years of injustice. Would you agree? 400 years. So the last thing they need is an unjust God. So when it comes to this justice of God that is presented through relationships, I'm drawn to my experience in Ethiopia. 2012, I was in Ethiopia. I'm walking through some of these rural communities, and for the first time, my cultural lenses changed completely. I've studied the Bible for a long time, and for the first time, I got to see the Bible differently. Because in Ethiopia, as we speak, they do life in community. They move in some sort of a clan. Like when you read the Ten Commandments, and we're going to get to that part of honor your father and mother, Moses is not speaking to little kids. He's speaking to adults. Because in their culture, back then, and in this culture, you take care of mom and dad. It's just the way it is. It's just no questions asked. Implying that the way you disciple your children on how they will eventually deal with you as an old person is how you deal with your parents and how you train them. Does that make sense? So here's the point. The point simply is this, that when the Bible describes this generational curse or generational sin or generational punishment that based on the scriptures, look at what he's saying. He says, I'm going to punish the children for the sin of the parents to the, how many generations? Third and fourth generation is the concept of accountability that this covenant, oh my goodness, if I had the time to explain this in detail, this covenant that God made with Abraham and that has made with whoever is a believer today, it was never done at an individual level. The covenant with God begins at a personal level, but is for the good of others. Here's the picture. Here's the picture. This is what life is about. So today, what I want to remind you is this, that the wrath of God visits up to the fourth generation because he is a just God. I'm just telling you, if you are in trial right now, if you got to go to court this week, if you are in a situation where you need justice, you want a just judge. Would you agree? So all that we're saying right here in this moment, this conditional relationship is God saying, I am not only your God, but trust me, I will be a just God to you. Is that attractive to anybody? I don't think my sermon is clicking today, but I'm just bringing this concept of justice. It's called wrath. It's the wrath of God. He has to punish those who decide to move away from his protection, those who decide to worship idols and to worship other things, and eventually he has to punish because of the covenant that he made. He made a covenant. And the covenant says that it's a legal binding status. It's not just, I love you, you love me, let's just get together. It's a legality, a concept of legality. Now, here's the good news of the gospel, and this is how we close our time together. The news of the gospel is that the wrath of God is needed, the justice of God, to express the mercy of God. But anytime you get the B-U-T in the Bible, should put a smile your face. But I am the same God that is able to show love. I love not to the third, not to the fourth generation, not to the fifth. How many generations he will love you? I am the God that have no choice, but based on my character, I have to punish. I have to bring justice in the experience. But I am the same God that will love you. I will love you, and I will love the children of your children and the children of your children of your children of your children. How many do I get? Can I get it to 1,000? Children of your children of your children. I will love them, and I will love them. Watch this, please. I will love them as long as they will love me first. And when you love me, this is what you do. What do? You keep. You maintain. You embrace not a better worldview, you make me your worldview. It's not that you know better about God, or you're growing in your knowledge of God, or you're a different person because now you're coming to church. It's that now God is what determines who I am. I used to be a slave. Now I'm free, not because I'm walking into the land where there is no complications or the possibility of slavery. It's because now I have learned that love has the ability to take the justice of God and expand the mercy of God. So I wish, and I can tell you and close our time by basically saying, I wish and I can do that, but I can't. But I wish and I could just say, oh man, and this generation loved God. Had a D at the end of the word. L-O-V-E-D. And this generation, not only they keep, but they kept the commandments. Now, I told you from the beginning, this is Deuteronomy. The next book is Joshua. And Joshua, the next leader, chapter 24, verse 15, speaks to the people and says, you're going to have to make up your mind who you're going to serve. Because when it comes to me and my family, we will love and keep the commandments. What is Joshua saying? The very next book is the book of Judges, which ends by saying, everyone did according to their own understanding. What am I saying? I'm just telling you that from this point forward, the people are going to do exactly the opposite. And hell is about to break loose. Justice is about to show. So what do we do? What do we do? Because, I mean, things are not looking better for us. Is our nation divided? Did you see Donald Trump tweeting yesterday about asking all the players, all the NFL games going on this morning, today, that he doesn't want them to kneel? He wants them to stand and salute the flag? Anybody tracking? Now, is a political stand or is that whatever, national, whatever, and I'm all for those things. But here's the bottom line. It's just an example of how divided we are, how broken we are. And things are not going to get better. So what do we do? Well, it is what we do. Here's what we do. I honestly believe that this verse, as much as it's given to the people of Israel, I think this verse is talking about not the Israelites. You know what this verse is talking about? The Israelite. Have you met him? It's not about the Jews. It's about the one single Jew. His name is... Here's the beauty. Is that God loved E.D. Jesus. Because Jesus loved God. How did Jesus love God? Jesus, what did he do with the law? Jesus kept the law. And Jesus been in this perfect condition of 33 years of walking on this earth, he's able to be found sinless. No sin in the life of Jesus. And when he's at the perfect epicenter of obedience, the Father, because of the previous verse and the covenant made with Abraham, he wished and he would have not made that covenant to begin with. Because now the Father has to place his wrath and justice not in us, but place it in him. And the one who knew no sin for you and I, he became. So remember that Good Friday? Father, why have you? The why is because I loved you. Why did you do that? I kept the commandments. Why are you forsaking me? And then the Father has to speak into the life of Jesus and remind him, the reason why I have to place my wrath on you, the reason why you who knew no sin have to experience sin, is because through you, I'm going to love thousands of generations. Because in 2017, on the first Sunday of October, there will be a family. There will be a man and a young woman sitting in this place that will need to experience my love. Because this is the morning that we understand that without the love of God, all that we have left is justice. And if you ever to get justice from God, you're going to hell. If I get justice, I'm going to hell, because that's the right thing for God to do. I am a sinner. I am broken. I am an idol worshiper. I don't fear God. I think that I'm God most of the time. I think counsel from no one, and no one tells me what to do. But in his mercy, he's not putting the expectation on the people. He's talking about the one single Jew. And this beautiful man by the name of Jesus comes into the picture and receives the wrath of God, goes to the deepest of sorrow, eventually to death, and laying on a graveside on the third day. Anybody knows what happened on the third day? If you are not a believer, I'm challenging you right now, right here. What would you do without believing the resurrection of Jesus? If you have an answer, talk to me after the service, because I want to hear what you got to say. But after everything I just told you, you have to be glad he came back from the dead, that he's alive, and that he loves you so much. He loves you so much that here is how the love of God is portrayed. The love of God is portrayed to you, not so you can be the one loving him and keeping the commands. I want you to keep the commands. I want you to love God. I want you to be thankful right now, right here in this moment, that the Father put the justice in Jesus, and that Jesus responded by what we are calling a love, or in this case, he responded by a covenantal obedience. Jesus is the person that through his love and through his enduring of this justice and taking the punishment, he now has the ability to empower you to move from, do I have to love? Do I have to forgive? Do I have to go to church? Do I have to get baptized? Do I have to become a member of the church? Do I have to tithe? Anybody on that track right now? Are you at the place right now that, do I have to listen to this bald guy? Well, yeah, you do. But instead, when you understand this beautiful message of redemption, it's not that things get better or easier. It's that your attitude moves now to, do I get to receive Jesus? Do I get to have a relationship with God? Do I get to be baptized? Oh my goodness. Do I get to tithe? Wow! Do I get to manage 90% of the income? Ooh, that's grace. Do I get to forgive? Do I get to do the right thing? Singles, going back to my conference, do I get to experience sex at its fullest? Yeah, it's called marriage. Go for it. It's fun. It's worth it. The perspective must change. But it begins by embracing the covenant, not between you and God. And I want you to make a covenant with God. But it's between the Father and the Son. That's the beauty of the gospel. Will you stand?